This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today. 150 years ago today, the siege at Fort Sumter, South Carolina, ended with a surrender of Union troops to the Confederate forces that launched the assault. The 34-hour battle was the opening salvo of the Civil War, the bloodiest war in the country's history. And while the war's geography never approached Wisconsin, it had a significant effect on life in what was then a recently minted state. Tens of thousands of Wisconsinites fought in the Civil War, and the state played a key role in supplying the Union Army throughout the war's history. The Civil War sets the backdrop for today's edition of Lake Effect, and the ideal person to give us an overview of how it touched Wisconsin is Lance Hertigan. Hertigan is the chair of the Wisconsin Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission, and he joins us by phone. Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's great. It's a real historic day for us with the firing on Fort Sumter 150 years ago.
Well, let me ask you something, because, of course, the firing on Fort Sumter happened 1,000 miles away from Wisconsin. What was the common sentiment in Wisconsin about the start of the war?
Well, Wisconsin, first off, there had been a lot of false alarms about the war coming, and many people didn't expect that the war would happen, that they would be resolved. So they said that the war clouds gathered, but they always blew away. So this time, when Fort Sumter was fired upon, Wisconsin, even though it was a new state and fairly far away, was pretty stunned. As close a way I can describe it would probably be the firing on Pearl Harbor or even 9/11. There was a shock and a quietness and then a resolve to do something.
And so then, I guess it goes without saying, Wisconsin really felt connected to the rest of the to the rest of the Union. It wasn't that they felt like an outlying state in those days.
Well, I think they felt that they had just joined the Union a dozen years before, and they wanted to prove that they were worthy of being a member of the United States. But a lot of the people in Wisconsin, of course, came from elsewhere at that time. They came from Pennsylvania and Maryland and Virginia and New York and New England, and therefore they were tied into the Union in pretty intense ways.
Can you walk us through how the state got ready to enter the Civil War? What motivated regiments to form, and really, how did the state go about getting set?
Well, it was difficult because, you know, there was no mechanism for them. What they did was use the militia system, which was a way the federal government would call on the states to raise regiments of militia to be put into federal service. So the state of Wisconsin had to literally raise a regiment of roughly 1,000 soldiers and outfit it, and then it would be turned over to federal authority. So Wisconsin was always under the gun trying to get these regiments to come up. You know, there never were enough uniforms or belts or hats or canteens or any of that. So it was a real scramble to put these regiments in the field, especially the early ones.
Well, and there was not a lot of equipment. What was there in terms of experience? How much experience was there in terms of military leadership?
Not very much. You had some West Pointers living in the state, like Rufus King and some others, and they had some militia experience, but nothing extensive. You had some Mexican War veterans from the Mexican-American War in 1848, but they were pretty innocent about it. I like to say that, you know, the Wisconsin volunteer was probably the most innocent individual who ever went to war. They had no sense of it. You know, there was no film. They had paintings of the war, which are all neat. They had stories from their great-grandfathers about the Revolutionary War, but they really had no sense of what was going to happen.
Of course, the reality proved to be a lot different than what they might have expected.
Yeah, I think they fell further. The actual reality of what they faced, it made them pretty despondent very early.
Well, what motivated someone in Wisconsin to sign up to fight in this war when we were so far removed?
Well, basically, it was the sense of their grandfathers and great grandfathers had formed the United States. Remember, we were less than a century old when this occurred, and they felt that the Southerners were trying to disrupt or break down the Union that their ancestors had formed, their grandfathers had formed. So the bulk of the soldiers went off, I think, with a sense that they were going to restore the Union. There were some that was to free slavery or end slavery at the time. But that wasn't the driving motivation for an 18-year-old kid in Wisconsin. Some went to escape farm life. Some went to for adventure. So like all wars, there's a great story about a young lady who was encouraging her boyfriend to enlist, and she said, "You know, I'll never kiss you again, John, unless you sign the roll." I should point out, he refused to sign the roll, but we don't know whether she kept her vow.
I know a couple of years in, there was a draft instituted.
Right.
How did Wisconsin take to the Civil War draft?
They didn't like it very much. There was the first real draft riot in American history occurred in Port Washington, Wisconsin, and that was a result of a state draft. In other words, the state was being required to fill regiments, and when they fell short, then the state had to initiate a draft to fill the regiments. And the draft commissioner in those days, you know, went into town, and he had a list of names and a big wire basket with numbers in, and he'd pull a number, and then there would, you know, Anton Schmidt was called out, and of course the crowd had gathered to watch this, and the crowd rioted. They burned all the draft records and tramped through the town and created all sorts of disturbances. So they didn't like it much. A lot of people were opposed to the war. Many immigrant types had come from other countries to avoid the draft or some kind of military service. And, you know, they weren't allowed to vote in many cases, but yet they were on those doggone draft rolls. So that went on. So they were not happy about it in many cases. But at the same time, the first 4, 5, 6, 8 regiments were filled very quickly by volunteers.
Well, now, as you say, there were not a lot of experienced officers, and certainly the volunteers were young and had, for the most part, not fought in battle before. How did the vaunted Iron Brigade come about then, given it seems to be quite a contrast?
Yeah, the Iron Brigade was made up of the 2nd, 6th, 7th Wisconsin, and 19th Indiana. Went to the Army of the Potomac on the east, and it was the only Western Brigade in the Eastern Army. And, of course, that set those young Western kids. Now, we were considered Westerners in those days. You know, so they're out there. They thought they were representing the West and that everybody's eyes were upon them. And they were lucky in the fact that they didn't get involved in the early actions of the war. They had almost a year of training. One of them under a West Point officer by the name of John Gibbon, who spent 4 months shaping them. So when they went into their first combat, they were pretty prepared, and they fought 4 battles in the space of about 4 weeks, and ultimately were a key figure at the Battle of Antietam in 1862 and opened the infantry battle of Gettysburg in 1863. They went into that battle with 1,833 men and came out with 671.
Wow!
But they held the whole Confederate Army up for almost a full day.
Now, what was the impact the Civil War had as it was going on the Wisconsin economy?
Actually, it was a blessing in many ways because, of course, we were the number one wheat producer in the nation at that time, and so the crops took off. You had the people were raising livestock to sell for foodstuffs. We had leather tanners and we had lead mines in southwestern Wisconsin. There was pretty much of a boom in a lot of cases back in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's role in providing the stuff of war, everything from wood to leather to food to animals, was pretty important. And it changed a lot. And, you know, Wisconsin really was right on the edge of the Industrial Revolution, and that really drove us forward.
Well, and I know there are some eastern states that saw a big hit in their economy because all of a sudden the trade that they used to have with the South was disrupted, but I gather that was not the case here?
No, typically Wisconsin traded down the Mississippi River. And then when the war started, of course, then they were forced to look for new markets, so they went to New England and to the east, and that, of course, tied us in closer to that to the North in the causes of the during the Civil War, but they really at that point there was such a demand for stuff for the armies that Wisconsin began to thrive. Now we didn't have a lot of population, 775,000, at the start of the Civil War. That's not a lot by our standards. If you can imagine, I can't imagine, you know, they'd be scattered all through the state. There weren't many people in one place. So it was a pretty important jump. And of course, the price of wheat almost doubled in the course of the first year of the war and all of those things. But we had men out too, out of our population of 775,000. In the end, we had 91,000 soldiers came from Wisconsin, a very high ratio. Of that number, 11,000 roughly died of disease and wounds. I think the number of actually killed in battle was just under 4,000. But those are pretty, that left, you know, women and the people behind to take care of the farms and the shops and the buildings and the all of that.
Well, and what about the long-term effect on the economy after the war was over?
There was a panic, with, you know, a financial panic, obviously, afterwards because the soldiers came home. And all of a sudden, a lot of the, you know, they didn't need a lot of stuff. So there was a period right after the war when there was a depression in Wisconsin. But the side effect of that is that many of the returning veterans went west. You know, a guy would be gone for years, and he'd come home, and he'd find his younger brother sitting at the table in his spot. He didn't fit anymore in the family structure. And so they were restless. They had seen the whole country and had done great things. And, the open land to the west, the Dakotas and the Nebraska, beckoned them. And they came back. It's interesting. When they get to be about 50 or 60, they tend to come home again, back to Wisconsin. And that's... you can track that in a large number of veterans.
Do you see some parallels in what played out during the Civil War in terms of what's going on in this country today in terms of states' rights versus federal power?
Well, I think we never solved all of the answers. You know, I mean, the Civil War was about those very questions about state rights. What does it mean to be an American? What rights the states have with a strong federal government, weak federal government? And all of those questions, you know, they keep evolving, don't they? I mean, they start dealing with those issues in the Civil War, and then ultimately we're still talking about many of those things today.
Do you think there's a lot of discussion about that being, you know, one of the driving factors, obviously, for the Civil War? Is there some disservice we do by downplaying the slavery or abolition question as well?
No, I don't think so. I think the slavery and abolition question is plays a role in this whole reason that the South left the Union or tried to form another state. And what happens is that the young soldiers from Wisconsin leave as a majority to preserve the Union. But when they actually see slavery, I mean, they actually look into the face of slavery, they begin to recognize that it's just unfair. One guy writes, he said, I ran into this carpenter who was black and was a slave and owned by somebody, and he said it wasn't fair that what this carpenter made was owned by somebody else. And later, of course, they began to see that the end of slavery would mean the end of war, would hasten the end of it. And finally, they came to, somehow you had to reconcile costs, all the costs of this, and you had to recognize that the freeing the slaves or ending slavery in this country was a real high moral cause of it.
And finally, this was a war that started 150 years ago. Why do you think it is such a vibrant part of history today?
Well, I think it's our war in so many ways. I think if you went in anywhere, any officer, any your friends, and you ask six or seven of them, probably three or four of them would have had a Civil War relative. And Americans somehow understand that the Civil War was significant and important. They're not always able to explain it, but they have this terrible fascination with it, and that's been forever. I think we've always looked to it. It's our war. We can be proud of the soldiers on both sides, even though the Confederates were fighting for a cause that probably wasn't very good. But they were still ours, and in the end, I think part of that is, that's part of the reason. The other reason is that there were so many letters and documents written. Everybody was able to read and write at a third grade level by the time of the Civil War. And you had photography coming in. And all of these things allow us to look back and to really get a sense of that time and that period and to help us understand it. Just think you can look at a photograph of some poor soldier taken at, Fredericksburg, Virginia in 1862. and we get to actually see their faces, and it makes them human.
Well, Lance Hertigan, thanks so much for helping humanize the story even more.
I hope so. It's a good story. I hope many people, you know, take a chance and look at some of the materials and enjoy all the commemorations that are going on.
Well, thanks again.
Okay.
Lance Hertigan is the chair of the Wisconsin Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission and former director of the Institute of Civil War Studies at Carroll University. Today marks the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War's first battle, the Siege of Fort Sumter. Stay tuned. There is more of Lake Effect and our special Civil War Anniversary Edition coming up next on Milwaukee Public Radio.